This is my first hike since like 6 months ago, since before the lockdown. And it seems like a lot more people are in all the hiking spots these days. I think since most hangout places have been closed, people needed some way or some form of outlet, some way to get out of the house and the funk of months of a world turned upside down. More than anything, I think that people are scared. People are scared and anxious, and we are anxious about so much, from our health, our families, our careers or jobs, but we are even more anxious about our future. Many of us are fighting a battle to stay sane and somehow stay positive, but it's hard, eh? It's really, really hard. What makes this period so challenging is that so much doesn't make sense. I mean, COVID-19 created some kind of a void in human existence, like a kind of a black hole, something that seems to be pulling us in, but no one really knows what's on the inside or what's on the other side of it. But things were not necessarily peachy before that night in March when our president came on TV and said, "My fellow South Africans." We kind of didn't imagine that things could get any worse than they were, or they have been in the past couple years. When he said we'd do a 21-day lockdown, we thought maybe it won't be that bad. It was more like a free holiday. It's been 6 months now, and it stopped being funny a long, long time ago. For the past couple of years, many people have been turning towards spirituality in all its various forms as a way to find some grounding in their lives, to try to find some purpose or a bigger reason for all the hardships that they are facing. In South Africa, many people have gone the route of African spirituality and embraced a belief system that centers around the existence of ancestors being beings who can affect material change in people's lives. And by extension, there have been a growing number of people who have gone through initiation or Twasa to become healers or Isangoma. Many online and TV channels have come into being with many healers pursuing different kinds of ways to educate people about this form of spirituality. The same can be said for many other spiritual beliefs. I think there's a lot more churches that have come up in recent years, and churches that are not necessarily your typical old school churches. I have a confession to make. As someone who is deep within African spirituality, I'm anxious to admit that I don't always believe in African spirituality. Sometimes I doubt my experiences. I doubt my dreams. I doubt whether I'm really experiencing what I am or if I'm actually just projecting what I want to experience. I'm not entirely sure what makes African spirituality in particular so difficult to navigate. Not only is it difficult to navigate, but it is also riddled with uncertainty that probably comes from how this belief system has always been portrayed as dark and evil. Maybe it is the lack of clear or comprehensive information, or not being sure who to turn to ask questions, that kind of make you feel vulnerable sometimes, or knowing how to figure out who is telling the truth and who is just really gassing you up for likes online. So it has been a nagging doubt that I have carried with me since I consciously embarked on this journey about 10 years ago. It's a deep doubt that sometimes leaves me crippled and scared of taking certain steps. It is a doubt that always whispers, what if none of this is real? Or what if I am just imagining all of this? The thing about spirituality is that it relies a lot on intuition. a kind of innate sense of knowing. Knowing that this is right and this is wrong, or yes or no. And when we hit stormy waters in our lives, it is this intuition that we use to navigate in the darkness. It is an intuition that we often link to our belief or our particular version of God. But a lot of the time when the storm hits, it is usually the intuition that is first to fall overboard. Then we find ourselves sailing with really no direction. The pandemic has felt a lot like sailing in the ocean during a storm at night without a compass. We start grasping at anything, really, anything that will give you a kind of assurance that everything will work out, or something that says, whatever is happening, I have a plan for you, and you in particular, and whatever is happening will work out to your particular advantage. But now, how do you decide what to reach out for? How do you know if you are being drawn towards a particular type of spirituality, or you are just trying to escape the storm? Above all, how do you know if spirituality is even real? Because sometimes the turbulent storm in your life can leave you asking, does God himself even exist? To attempt to answer these questions, I would like us to do something. Okay, humor me. Take everything that you believe about your form of belief and put it in a little box and put it aside. Take your God, take your ancestors, take Jesus, take Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, take your grandmother, your dreams about snakes and water, everything, all of that. Put it in a little box and put it aside. Because what we're going to do now, we're going to deconstruct spirituality and approach it in a very, very different way. This particular part is meant for those who not only question their beliefs, but question belief in itself. Whenever we talk about proof in spirituality, things get a bit shaky and people get a bit touchy. Because no one can really stand in a court of law and prove without a shadow of a doubt left in anyone's mind that God exists. Proof, we have come to believe, is the domain of science. So let us take a journey in spirituality through science. If you've attended any form of schooling, you'll be familiar with the concepts of biology, which are concerned with the organic world of living beings and plants and such. And I'm sure you're also familiar with the science as it relates to the planets, space, time and measurements and forces and things like that. And I have no doubt that you have heard of the atom. We grew up being taught that the atom is the basic building block of the material world, basically the world as we know it, and in many ways, our actual universe. Everything that you see, touch, taste, or smell is made of atoms. The planets too, and the stars, and basically everything that exists is made out of atoms, even the air that we breathe. So even the air is a kind of a physical entity because of that. This is the solid world that we all, including atheists, know for a fact that we live in. This is the place where the laws of science and biology and all other ologies converge, right? So, here we go. The atom itself can be broken down into smaller parts, right? Inside the atom are particles called electrons, which orbit the atom's nucleus. This is very similar to how the planets in our solar system orbit around the sun. It's like they make little rings of a path. Now, in the early 1900s, scientist Niels Bohr found that electrons don't just spin around in the nucleus of an atom. Sometimes they actually jump in between orbits. Now, in the early 1900s, scientist Niels Bohr found that electrons don't just spin around the nucleus of an atom. What they actually do is that they jump between orbits. Stay with me. What scientists found is that if our solar system was like the inside of an atom and the planets were electrons, then planet Earth kept jumping into the orbit of Mars. But the strange thing is that the Earth didn't just move from its orbit to that of Mars. It actually vanished from its own orbit and reappeared in a different orbit. The important part to note is that it didn't disappear into thin air. The atomic level is smaller than air, so there is nothing for it to disappear into. What has actually happened is that the planet has vanished from existence and appeared somewhere else. Electrons vanish out of existence and appear at a different point within the atom. And this is only the beginning of the freakiness. According to Niels Bohr, the position of an electron comes into being only when you measure it. Let me give you an example. Let's say you wanted a burger but didn't know any burger joints in your area. In today's world, you will use your phone to Google a burger place and you would pick one, and then you would use your GPS on your phone for directions. Logic says that the burger place is already at the address. You just need to find it and go there. But what the scientist found was that at a subatomic level, the burger place is potentially anywhere in the entire universe, and it only appears at the address closest to you once you Googled it. So in Googling the burger joint, you didn't just find its location, but you basically brought it into existence through your searching. Welcome to the world of quantum mechanics. Richard Feynman, an American theoretical physicist known for his pioneering work in the field of quantum mechanics, once said that the difficulty with understanding quantum mechanics is really a psychological one, and it exists in the perpetual torment that results from you saying to yourself, but how can it be like that? Which is a reflection of an uncontrolled and utterly vain desire to see it in terms that you are familiar with. Here's the thing. At a quantum level, there is no solid matter. All there is basically particles that are themselves essentially balls of vibrating energy that pop in and out of existence. So while we thought that we are made of atoms, what we are in actual fact is just energy patterns which have no mass. And these energy patterns are called quantum particles. These particles can communicate with each other across time and space instantaneously. That is to say, time and space simply do not exist, not in the way that we understand them to. Not only that, but scientists were baffled by how it is that in a quantum vacuum, which is a space that contains virtually no energy, particles were able to generate their own energy in order to bring themselves into being. German theoretical physicist Werner Heisenberg determined that these particles did so by borrowing energy from the future through a principle that he called the uncertainty principle. These particles were getting energy from an event that hadn't even happened yet. However, these particles also have to give that energy back into that future event to keep the system from collapsing. So, at a quantum level, there is no here or there. There is no now or then. All that has ever happened at any point, and all that is currently happening, and all that will ever happen, exists in the same instance. So behind the veil of quantum mechanics lies an unmanifest existence. All that is. It is the field of unmanifest reality. So what gives this field of unmanifest existence the form that we call the physical world? It's awareness, or more specifically, consciousness. And not just consciousness in the sense of me and you being aware of our own existence and that of the world, but a consciousness that is aware of the entirety of existence. A kind of cosmic consciousness that isn't also passive either, but it has intent and it has the capacity to mobilize the entire quantum field to bring the universe as we know it into being. Another scientist, a physicist, John Wheeler, put it like this. He said, "The universe gives birth to consciousness, and consciousness gives birth to the universe." It still doesn't make any sense, right? Quantum mechanics' greatest scientist once said, "It is safe to say that nobody understands quantum mechanics." And he also said that if you think you understand quantum mechanics, then you don't understand quantum mechanics. So to get back to my initial question of, is this all real that you're experiencing? Well, one of my favorite scientists, Professor Jim Al-Khalili, says that deep inside everything around us, we have found a universe completely unlike our own. He goes on to say that everything that we call real is made of things that are themselves cannot be regarded as real. So the answer to the question, no, none of this is real. What you're experiencing at the core of it is not real. Yet, here I am, and here you are, and here's everything. And what of God? Does God even exist? Well, hold on.
I need to know everything. Who in the what and the where? I need everything. Trust me, I hear what you're saying, but act like it's new what you're telling me. I'm curious, George. I hop in the Porsche, it's 5 and a horse. I'm ready for war. I'm coming for throws to turn to a ghost. I need to know everything.
Within philosophy, there is a concept called the God of the Gaps. Simply put, it states that throughout human history, whenever people could not explain certain phenomenon, whether natural or not, whenever there was a gap in their knowledge system, they would insert God into that gap. Early man saw great flashes of light in the sky. That's God. A tiny seed would fall into the ground and grow into a huge tree. That must be God. The atheist view of spirituality and religion is that people use God as a kind of cop-out to make themselves feel better whenever the world confronts them with something that they cannot understand or something that generally scares them. Up to so far, I have only spoken about scientific concepts and quoted renowned scientists, and I have not touched on the religious nor the spiritual. It is also important to point out that quantum physics, though it is over 100 years old by now, is still an evolving field of science. There are still many aspects of it that are still being debated, and some parts of it are already fading out. One of the most famous contemporary scientists, Neil deGrasse Tyson, believes that just because science cannot explain something does not mean that God is behind it. Also, scientists like him generally believe that eventually science will be able to explain everything. But as it stands, what is unanimous is that at a quantum level, reality as we know it falls apart, and so do just about every law of science that is known to man. So the real world as we know it, the very core of it, is made up of what scientifically is not real. The reason I pointed out the idea of the God of the Gaps is because once we move from science into spirituality, it's easy to start writing off everything as God and bail out of seeking deeper understandings or being confronted with something that doesn't fit our worldview. Now, when it comes to quantum mechanics, where science seems to fall short, it seems that spirituality is able to offer answers. But not just answers that are dripping with wishy-washy ideas about an old white man with a beard who lives on a cloud and loves being hyped up. I'm talking about answers that provide astonishingly precise answers without pulling at heartstrings or guilt-tripping you into believing something. I'm talking about answers to questions about quantum physics that have existed for thousands and thousands of years. Let's start off in the East. Quantum field theory states that at the smallest scale, our universe is an infinite field of vibrating balls of energy called quantum particles. It is through the vibration of the field, or the excitation of it, that the material world is born. Renowned author Deepak Chopra calls this field the field of infinite potentiality. This field carries the capacity to shape existence itself. What directs the field to manifest the universe that we live in is an all-encompassing consciousness, which is active and has intent. Now, in Eastern Vedantic philosophy, there is what is called the Akasha. The word is a Sanskrit word and is derived from the root kas, which means to be. It appears as a masculine noun in Vedic Sanskrit, with a generic meaning of open or space or vacuum. In Hinduism, Akasha is used to mean the essence of everything that exists in the material world. The main characteristic that is attributed to the Akasha is Shabda, sound, or vibration. It is from the Akasha that the idea of the Akashic records comes from. The Akashic records are said to be like the DNA of existence itself, where knowledge about everything that has ever happened, is happening, and will happen is recorded. Someone who was very familiar with the philosophy of the Akasha was Nikola Tesla, the man who helped invent the electricity supply system and one of the greatest scientific minds of all time. Tesla was so fascinated with the Vedic cosmology that he began using the words Akasha, or the all-pervading material of the universe, and prana, which is energy, to describe mass and energy in his scientific work. At the beginning of his study into Vedic philosophy, Tesla once said, "My brain is only a receiver. In the universe, there is a core from which we obtain knowledge, strength, and inspiration. I have not yet penetrated the secrets of this core, but I do know that it exists." In keeping with the idea of the core of existence being balls of vibrating energy, in Buddhist philosophy, Om is a sacred syllable that is considered to be the first resonating vibrational sound within an individual, and the sound from which everything came into existence. At this point, I think we can bring Christianity in. In Genesis 1, verse 2 to 3, it says, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light." In this instance, the infinite field of potentiality can be understood to be the unformed universe in which it was only God's consciousness that existed. In my personal interpretation of the Bible in relation to quantum physics, I believe that God is the infinite field of potentiality. It is through his consciousness, or his awareness of the field, that existence came into being, because science says that it is through awareness that the field is given form. One of my favorite phrases from Islam is kun fayakun. It is an Arabic phrase that appears in the Quran, and it means be and it is. In the Quran, in Surah 6 and Ayah 73, it says, "It is He who created the heavens and the earth for true purpose. On the day he says, be, it will be. His word is truth. All control on the day the trumpet is blown belongs to him. He knows the seen and the unseen. He is the all-wise and the all-aware." It is that last part, that Allah is the all-aware, that signals that Islamic teachings show evidence of knowledge about the quantum field and how it works. To dig further into Christianity, the teachings of Christ also carry many insights about the field. Again, this is my interpretation of the Bible as someone who is not a Christian. In much the same way as science is facing the reality that it cannot comprehend how quantum mechanics works, but it just knows that it does. In John 14, verse 6, Jesus says to Thomas, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." I believe what is meant here is that Jesus is saying that ordinary man cannot wrap their head around how the infinite field of potentiality works and how all of existence came into being from it. So in Jesus becoming flesh, he's sort of simplifying the information. It's like he's giving a tutorial. When he stepped out of the boat and walked on water, he was demonstrating how awareness of the field gives the reality not only to its form, but it is also through that awareness that you can transcend the boundaries, because at a quantum level, a body of water is made of the same thing as solid mountain. When he calmed the storm, he was demonstrating that the effect of awareness has on elements that are not solid. In African spirituality, when we consult with a sangoma who uses bones for divination, several things occur in that moment. For one thing, that bag of bones, leso skwama, represents the veil that separates the material world from the field of infinite potentiality, where past, present, and future all exist in the same instance. What the sangoma then has to do during that divination is that they have to direct those instruments of divination, or to give them coordinates for where in the field to retrieve certain sets of information. The sangoma does this in collaboration with you, both you and their spirit guide and God. After giving the instruments of divination instructions of what kind of information to retrieve from the field or the Akashic records, the sangoma then throws the bones. In the constellation of those thrown bones, what the healer is accessing is the past, the present, and the future. They are reading what has happened, what is happening, and what will happen, all in one instance. African spirituality's definition of ancestors also gives an understanding of the quantum realm as well. In indigenous belief systems across the continent, the understanding of God is that God is an entity of immense complexity that cannot be fully comprehended. Therefore, we all have guides who then function as intermediaries who basically simplify our engagement with God, who is himself or itself infinite. However, what is key to understand is that African spiritual belief systems, just like those in the East, believe that there are levels to the realms that come after the physical death. It is believed that a deceased person's function as idlozi lasts for about 3 to 4 generations, and that after that, the spirit goes to be one with God, but only after they have learned to let go of their earthly attachments. This is what healers mean when they say, idlozi liyakhuliswa. We, as those who are in the material world, are still connected to those who have crossed over. However, a person who has died still needs to learn to navigate the field of spirituality on the other side and how to communicate and implement that knowledge to those in the material world. Ultimately, the spirit needs to find peace beyond its own desires and its baggage of earthly complexities. In the amazing YouTube channel AfroSavvy, Gogo Simenjalo has a great series on amadlozi. In one of the episodes, it is explained that the gift of healing is given by idlozi, but the gift is an entity unto itself. So wonke amadlozi eventually need to return to source, to return to God, but the gift itself remains. The history of indigenous medicine also shows a profound understanding of how energy patterns work. When you walk into a pharmacy today, you'll come across hundreds of different types of medications. The pharmaceutical industry produces millions of different kinds of drugs. But in indigenous medicine, however, the range is not that wide. Yet, herbal medicine can treat a disproportionately large number of ailments compared to the number of herbs that are actually available. This is because healers understand that medicinal plants carry certain frequencies and that these frequencies are what treat the energy patterns of the actual ailment. Not only that, but healers can imbue herbs with specific healing frequencies. They can instruct medicinal herbs to serve particular functions. What is key to understand is that indigenous medicine functions on a physical and a spiritual level. Beyond ailments of the body, within African spiritual practices, there are modalities of healing that use medicinal herbs to attend to energy patterns across time and space. When a healer takes you through a cleansing ritual, they are actually attending to an ailment as it relates to time and space. What I mean is that the cleansing ritual could be related to something that happened in the past, or it could be related to something that has not even happened yet. You might have to cleanse the spirit of someone who has passed on in order to help them detach from something that is hindering them from ascending into a better understanding of the divine. Or you would need to cleanse in order to prepare for a child who's coming, or in order to find a better job. All of these incidences are not necessarily ailments, but a healer uses traditional medicine in collaboration with the spirit guides, yours and theirs, in order to attend to those energy patterns that could be hindering you either in the past, or in the present, or even in the future. Buddhist teachings talk about nirvana, which is a state in which a person is free from all attachments, especially attachments that stem from the ego. This state of detachment frees a person from all suffering and they return to be one with the field of infinite bliss. Today, the Catholic Church teaches that heaven is the ultimate end and fulfillment of the deepest human longings, the state of supreme definitive happiness. Being one with the conscious field of infinite potentiality is to be without needs or desire and to exist in eternal bliss. The opposite of this is to live with the torment of attachment to the material world, attachment to the ego itself. The second of the noble truths of Buddhism states that the root of all suffering is desire. Lucifer grew attached to his gifts and by extension to his ego. And hell is a representation of an eternal attachment to one's material life and egoistic desires. When a person goes through ukuthwasa in order to become a healer, they undergo a process called ukuvuma ukufa. Put simply, it is to embrace death, to embrace the death of the ego. The ancient ones knew that all manner of ill health stem from the ego and that one who has been chosen to heal must be willing to forego the desires of the ego in order to better be in tune with the infinite. I know that it has seemed as though I am attempting to conflate vastly different religions and spiritual practices into one. I'm not. I'm simply trying to show their commonality. We live in a world that is obsessed with what makes us different, or more specifically, what makes me better than the next person. A reasonable question then becomes, if I view all forms of spirituality as being equal in some way, then why do I practice African spirituality in particular? Well, in his book, God, The Human History of Religion, Reza Aslan says that faith is a choice and anyone who says otherwise is trying to convert you. This is an important point to think about because I have and I continue to read the Bible, but nothing in it convinces me to be Christian. Also, a Christian can talk to me for days on end explaining Christianity and I still won't become a Christian. Similarly, I can explain to someone all the virtues of my beliefs and they won't come out as a believer. What is missing here is a personal encounter. The truth is that personal encounters are extremely subjective. Five different people from five different spiritual backgrounds traveling in the same car can be involved in an accident and all five of them will come out with five completely different spiritual interpretations of what actually happened. What's even more important is that neither of them can invalidate their subjective experience that the other ones had. I have had my personal encounter with African spiritual beliefs. It shapes my entire world. I have met God on this path and I've met my guides on this path. Beyond that, the reason I do all the work related to my beliefs is because I feel that African spirituality is a spiritual language like any other belief or religion, and its voice is also valid. I believe that the African interpretation of the divine can contribute to the collective spiritual body of knowledge that humanity has amassed. The reason the voice of African spirituality has been silent for so long is not due to its nature. Same as the reason why other religions have become prominent in the world is not simply by virtue of their teachings. I think it is really, really important not to ignore human evolution or our capacity to adapt and how this impacts on our views of the world, even on a spiritual level. Say, for example, we woke up tomorrow and the whole world spoke only one language. In 100 years from now, there would be many different dialects of that language. In 1,000 years, those dialects would have developed into entirely different languages, and some of them wouldn't even resemble the original language. Same with religion. I mean, if we all woke up tomorrow believing one religion, 2,000 years from now, we will be right back where we are today with over 4,300 different religions and spiritual beliefs as of 2020. Nonetheless, I also believe that at its core, the essence of divinity or creation or existence is itself beyond geographical, racial, gender or socio-economic boundaries. At some point, we will have to let go of all that we think makes us different. So, going back to my question, does God really exist? My answer is yes. To me, God does exist. But I believe that it's not possible for us to physiologically comprehend the essence of God or the essence of existence itself. And I also believe that in learning to understand God, we learn to understand ourselves and each other even more. My name is Vusum Zinlande. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you light and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.